Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Did we just become best friends?
Yep!
Oh, Steve understands the meaning of the word pals, don't you, Steve? So you got three, four good pals, well, then you got yourself a tribe.
And you're in this search for something to hate. I can feel you rally around someone with your peers. But can you stand alone? Can you take the long way?
Utah, give me two.
Give me two. That's right. It's Michael Govia here for the Palazzo Podcast. It is a version of the show where I sit down one-on-one with a guest. I used to do Enrico's Inquisition. That was fun. And in fact, today's guest was a part of that originally way back in the day, which is really January of 2021. Not that long ago. But he was one of our first... Right. January 7th, 2021. That would be... a lot has changed. That's for damn sure. But I mean, you're Chris Towers. People know you as Chris Towers. Welcome, Chris Towers from CBS Fantasy Baseball Today. Also does football... Is there a football? I'm a moron, I guess. Is I assume there's a football today as well.
There's a fantasy football today as well, but I'm not on that one as much. I do the Fantasy Football Today newsletter, though. That is a big part of my job coming up. So,
wow, shocking news, shocking development here. Yeah, so me and Chris are going to go over a few things. We're all about being curious, not judgmental. Of course, I've stolen that from Ted Lasso. Have you ever seen Ted Lasso?
Love it, love it. One of my absolute favorite shows. The first season especially. The second season, you know, took a little time to get to where it was going, but ended up really good. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Ted Lasso.
It's hard. If you said I watched that show and I thought it was a piece of shit, I feel like maybe you need to go to therapy or something.
Some people say that, and I can see, like, it is like overly saccharine to a to a degree, and I can see why it kind of rubs people the wrong way, but I don't know. If you take it for what it is, like, it's not like the most laugh out loud funny show of all time. I've seen some.
It is not.
Like, you know, why does this get all the love that it does? And I get that, but it's very much like, you know, we kind of had a moment during the pandemic with like that and Schitt's Creek, where it's like this very like nice, affable, like makes you feel good version of comedy that. Like, it's not the only type of comedy that I like, but, like, I always struggle with, like, The Office when I rewatch it, because, like, it's such a mean show in a way like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, you have, like, these big emotional moments at the end of the show where, like, they have the weddings and everybody loves each other, and it always feels unearned on that show, and it's a show that, like, I feel like it kind of tries too hard to straddle the line between, like, you know, The Good Place is another one of those like feel good shows, and you know, just being like a Always Sunny in Philadelphia kind of thing, where like that's where it feels like it's supposed to be, but they don't want to go all the way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I prefer the Michael Schur, Ted Lasso type of comedy, personally.
I'm not trying to just be a weirdo. Some people do things to be contrarian. It is real. but I've never seen The Office straight through. I've been in a room when The Office was on, but I have never sat down and truly watched The American Office from beginning to end.
So. It's very funny. Like, I don't think you need to watch it from beginning to end. It gets derailed once Steve Carell leaves, but it's very funny. It's just not my favorite show.
It's what all people talk about half the time. It's half the memes and GIFs on Twitter. It's a huge part of our lexicon, and for this generation in particular, which I think we're part of the same generation, are we not?
Yeah. Like the millennial. What's the term? Late. Geriatric millennial, I think is what the term is for those of us in our now mid-30s, I guess.
Oh, you're in your mid-30s?
I'm next week on Monday. My birthday is on Monday, and I will be 34. So that is officially.
Oh, my God. For some reason, you're such a... I've looked up to you. I mean, I'd go back to 2016.
Have such a youthful air. To you.
Yeah, you do. It's that real young, vibrant, like I'm a trendsetter kind of personality and vibe that you have. That look at this. See, wow, damn, with Chris Towers, you're one lucky man. Greatness.
See? I guess.
Yeah, that I mean, take it for what it is.
Comfortable. Every time I go on a podcast, I'm like, we got a very special guest. It's like, is he coming on after me? I don't. Who's
you said
the
that,
special guest?
You said that on the first time you came on the show. That's, I remember that.
It's my bit. It's my recurring bit.
I toned down the intro this time, actually. If you notice, those of you listened to the first time Chris was on in January 7th, 2021, you'll notice I went, I was fired up. And it was the first time I got to talk with you. And you can look at yourself however you want. For me.
Now it's old hat.
Yeah. I mean, I could care less about what you do and who you are now, but there was a time when back in 2016, I would listen to you and Al Melchior and Heath Cummings and Adam Azer, and I could see myself right now in my shitty bathroom in Ann Arbor, taking a shower, putting on the pod. That was my thing, and now...
It's a good visual.
Man, I'll tell you what, that's a great visual right there. So... I also, though, but honestly, I was also going through a lot of shit back then, too. So to think about where I was, how I got there, and how I'm got to this point now and talking
That's
to you,
awesome.
And I don't take that for granted. And I know that you could appreciate that as well. You're funny. You're a jokester. But to me, I look at this moment, and I'm like, hey, I get to talk with Chris Towers more than once in my life. We get to talk fantasy. We get to talk about life. That is pretty cool. That's kind of the Ted Lasso in me, I suppose. I don't take that for granted, and I do appreciate that. So.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
Yay! Jasper says, did he say 50? No, he did not say 50. Okay. I'm 41, though, so I guess we are a little wider in the gap than I thought were, Chris. Yeah.
I can never tell. One, I can't tell how old anyone is. Like, I was talking about this. I'm on a flag football team, and I was talking about that with my teammates yesterday because I came to the realization that I'm the oldest player on my team. And I was like,
Veteran leader.
I just have no idea. Like, I basically, like, 24 to 45, you could be any range from that. And I'm like, yeah, sure. That makes sense. So that's why I shaved my head to try to, hide.
Oh, yeah.
To try to keep people guessing. Cause,
that's a secret of the pros.
The receding hairline kind of gives you away.
It does. Well, are you, like, the tight end, or what's your role there on the team?
I play a little, tight end, a little, snapping the ball and trying to get open in the short area is mostly what I'm doing. But, I'm sure-handed. I'm not the quickest guy on the team, but I'm a reliable target.
I think we have a lot in common right there. That's right. It's all about our hands. That's what we can provide the most of. And those option routes, right? You guys run option routes on those short intermediate targets? Or
I think pretty much everything's an option route. We don't really have, plays, so it's just kind of whatever you want to do.
So people get really intense to that. They'll have the quarterback armband out there. They'll have the plays. Oh, okay, that's not you.
I think we went up against that team yesterday, and that's why we lost.
Ah, I will give them credit. They are organized. They usually do. They always beat us. I used to play a lot of flag football up until about 2011. And, those guys always took it to us.
If you've got a plan, that really helps.
Athleticism does matter, too, in flag football a little bit more. It does matter, and that's also why we lost a lot.
Softball's a little easier for me in terms of the athleticism because, you got to run a couple times a game, but for the most part, you're fine.
Oh, yeah. I got softball tonight, and I'm going to play right field. They're going to put me over there, and I'm just – see, I play 3 times a week. Now, on this team, I'm the right fielder. I'm very happy with that. But on other 2 days of the week, I get to play second base, and I'm the manager of the team. So that's, I get to play that role. And then on the co-ed team on Sundays, I get to play shortstop. So I get my chance to do a little bit of everything. And I'm happy playing right field for this very more intense dude team. You know, I'm just like, put me over there. Yeah. You guys, this guy throws the ball a quarter mile at shortstop. He's incredible. So I don't need to even consider competing with him. Yeah. But it's about knowing your role. All right. Well, you're not here to hear us talk about softball. I mean, we're going to talk with Chris Towers about a multitude of things. So don't forget to follow Chris on Twitter at @CTowersCBS. And you can catch him on the Fantasy Baseball Today show. And, of course, you can get his writing. This guy's a pretty darn good writer. I read your football stuff a lot more than I do your baseball stuff. And that's not, like, any particular reason for that. That's just how it ended up. I mean, I would read your baseball stuff, too. But the truth is, I try to avoid getting into too much other baseball stuff in season when I'm creating my own stuff. And I feel like, yeah, I don't want to steal accidentally or something like that too. And not that I would, yeah, but who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, no, there was a period maybe 4 or 5 years ago where it seemed like every day I was writing something, and then, you know, Saris would write like a better version of that. And so I try to avoid that if I can now.
Yeah, I understand what you mean there. That sounds familiar to me. Jamie says, I think he does the CBS DFS as well.
I've been on there occasionally, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But that's only occasionally, folks.
Yeah.
No. I'm on Twitter at MJ Govey, of course. The Plausible Podcast, 2 L's, 2 Z's.
Utah. Give me 2.
Got the Discord. It's totally free. You can find that with the pin tweet, which is the tweet that you'll find at the top of a feed if you don't know what a pin tweet is. Do you think people don't know what a pin tweet is, Chris?
I think it's sort of self-explanatory. If you've used Twitter, I think so.
Hey, I don't know. I mean, you'd be surprised.
You're a lousy fucking softball player.
Whoa, 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 whoa. That is not cool, Tom Cruise. Don't say things, but he was talking to me, by the way, and that is true. I am lousy. All right, so yes, that's all free. The Patreon, you want to take it up another notch. It starts at $3. It could be worth it. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money. Times are tight, and things are not easy. All right, let's get into this segment.
But then one day, I was driving my little boy to school, and I saw this quote by Walt Whitman. It was painted on the wall there. It said, be curious, not judgmental.
One of my favorite scenes in television history. The whole dart scene is just unbelievably good.
It really snuck up on me. It did. I completely agree with you when you say that. I don't think that's hyperbole at all.
It, man, my thoughts with that show were like, really, Ted Lasso? Like, we're doing, like, I was like, this is going to be like the caveman show. The, like, Geico caveman show. There's no way this is going to be good, but they reworked the character, and it's like a little miracle, that show. Like, it's like a miracle that it even exists.
I completely agree. I don't like to always completely agree, but when you're right, you're right. And that moment hit me. I remember being alone, and everything you described about the pandemic and what we all know about it, and watching a guy who, you know, they don't make it obvious in the first season, not to give much spoilers away, but he's going through some pain and challenges, and there's other people feeling it too. And mm-hmm. Even rich, super rich owners of soccer teams, you can feel empathy for them. That's what I learned.
Yeah.
I was surprised to find that out myself. Yeah. So getting into this, I was originally calling it, this one goes to 11 things as Spinal Tap reference, but I thought I'd update it just in case we could attract some new viewers who might like Ted Lasso and be like, oh yeah, I know that. It's all about marketing, kids. It's all about marketing. So, right off the bat, can you name 3 players who could benefit from a trade and there would be a benefit for them fantasy-wise, over maybe over the next month or so, obviously with the trade deadline, literally about a month away here.
Yeah, yeah. It's August 2nd, I believe, this season, because I think July 31st is on a weekend. So that'll be important to remember. But, I think the two that immediately came to mind would be Luis Castillo and Tyler Mahle, 2 guys who pitch in a really, really tough park. I think more so Tyler Mahle because he's had issues with home runs, whereas Luis Castillo does a pretty good job of keeping the ball on the ground. But I think both of those guys, you know, if they got traded to a contender, one, obviously would increase their chances of getting wins. But 2, it would just make it so that they don't have to pitch half their games in, you know, it's not the worst offensive environment or the worst pitching environment in baseball, but it's pretty close. I mean, it's not Coors Field, but it's the worst outside of there. And Tyler Mahle has had, like, wild home road splits over his career. I'm trying to find it right now. Yeah, he has a
wild
3.74 ERA on the road compared to a 5.10 ERA at home. So I think Tyler Mahle is someone who would really benefit from a trade. And then I look at someone like Ramon Laureano, who plays in a really tough ballpark for hitters. You know, he's not someone who has a ton of power, but I think he could be a 2020 guy in the right environment. And obviously playing on a pretty bad Oakland Athletics offense doesn't help either. So he's someone who could get moved and I think have a one, he needs to play better than he has been since coming back from the suspension. But two, you know, if he gets in the right area, in the right offense, I think he could have a big second half. So he's the other, the third player that I would think of.
Yeah, I got no beef with any of that, and I'll just let that sit and simmer here. We do have a question, though, and I think this is useful because I know this guy a little bit. He's in our Discord, Jamie, and he wants to know, any tips for startup creators looking to get into fantasy sports? I mean, I know we need more of them, so we're always looking for more. We are in a shortage here in the market, but I always want to encourage people who think they can do it, give it a shot. Take your chance. Chris, what would you say to people who are looking to do this?
I mean, I think the biggest thing would be, one, just, you know, start doing it. There's no shortage of outlets out there. You can reach out to people. There's a ton of people who are willing to help. I think reaching out to analysts that you admire is a big thing. And if you're, you know, if you're talking about like trying to make it a career and you're younger, you're in college, say the thing I always say that was the biggest help for me was working at my college newspaper. You know, I was a journalism major at first in college, and then I realized that they have a GPA requirement for the college, for the journalism school, and the history school did not. So it was easier for me to get through college as a history major. But I worked at the college newspaper for 3 or 4 years, and, you know, I was lucky that ours paid. A lot of them aren't able to do that, and I don't know if they still do, actually, but, you know, this was 15 years ago. But it's...
Lifetime ago.
I mean, literally like a... sophomore in high school's lifetime ago.
Yes.
But yeah, like you get an opportunity to, one, learn how to write, which is big. You get a lot of opportunities, a lot of reps. You get to cover different things. I got to cover a bunch of different sports. I wrote about news. I wrote a pop culture column. So I just think the biggest thing is to get those reps, and to get the reps in an environment where you're getting feedback constantly, because feedback is really important. And once you, you know, once you start doing it as like a job, you get less feedback. So, you know, you're kind of, cause then it's just, you're doing the thing. So I think, you know, getting opportunities to do it where you're going to get constructive feedback is really important. So doing that, working with editors, working with, you know, outlets that give you an opportunity is a big thing. And then I would also say just like trying to find a niche. You know, I think at this point, like, video skills are a must, you know, being comfortable on camera, getting comfortable talking extemporaneously, all that stuff. But, you know, finding, you know, whether it's statistical analysis or data visualization or something like that, like finding something to differentiate yourself is also important.
And that's all I have to say about that.
I couldn't say it any better than that, my friend. Beautiful, beautiful. So I hope that helps. Jasper, I know you've had a big idea brewing in your brain for a bit, so I hope that gives you a little bit of purpose. And the only thing I would add, I did say that's all you had to say about that, but for me, I would recommend strongly that you get self-critical and let other people in, like you said, with the feedback. Be ready to let people pick you apart if you really want to take it up a notch and making sure that you're doing something. Be open to positive, or what they call constructive criticism. Yep. Mm-hmm. Completely down with that. And I've always... the days fly by, and you try to create something. We're doing the show, and then you know, I'll do something else later, and I'll go play softball, and then I got to write something for the Patreon later, and the days fly by, bing, 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 every day. But I still try to stop, if I can remember, to tell people, hey, I'd love to try to, you know, read something or take a look, listen to something. Jamie, I listened to one of your things a couple months back, and we talked about that, and that was a really positive step for him, because I told him what I thought of it. Honestly, it's important to have people you would trust to be honest, too. You don't want to get fake feedback either.
Yeah. You know, it's like getting, I don't know. I've always been very self-critical. I struggle to like have an accurate sense of where I am. So having an outside, like, and that's really hard. Like being edited is difficult. Like I've been on both sides of that. I've been an editor. I've been a writer, and it's really hard on both sides. But like you being a writer and being a content creator in general, like there's a lot of ego that goes into it. There's a lot of ego. I was watching George Carlin's American Dream on HBO. It's a documentary that Judd Apatow produced.
Loved it.
There's one part where he says, like, you have to have an ego to do this. And obviously, I'm not George Carlin, but to get up in front of people and say, like, your opinion or your, like, there's an ego involved in that inherently. No matter, you know, who you are or what you do, like, my opinion is important and people should hear it. It's an egotistic thing to do. So you have to be able to put that aside as a writer to get that feedback and to have that feedback land in a way that you're going to process it well. So it is difficult.
Yep. No doubt about it, my friend. We're talking live with Chris Towers here on the Palazzo Podcast. It's called Palazzo Pals because I like alliteration. So leave me alone if you don't like it, okay? I'll come up with something better in the future. But for now, I'm hoping to make him my Palazzo Pal. It's very cheesy, but it's true. And we're going to get honest with Chris here. He's very open. As far as I can tell, he's always been a pretty direct guy. I don't think he cowers. I think he's willing to talk about most things, and I appreciate that about him too. I think that does matter. So make sure you follow him and you're checking out CBS. You may have heard of it. It's been around since 1940s. We know CBS actually created Tiffany. I don't really know.
The Tiffany Network. The Columbia Broadcasting System, I think. It's been around for a while. Probably the
30s?
Probably the 40s. I don't know.
Might have been a radio a radio thing in the 30s. Hell.
Probably.
Yeah, that's probably right.
I could look it up, I'm sure.
Someone could Google it. Yeah, we don't need to tell you guys about that. All right, next question in the hopper here, and we're being curious, not judgmental, although maybe we are already making some judgments. Chris, inherently in life, having judgment is not a bad thing necessarily. No. It helps you live. It helps you avoid dying sometimes. It's important to have judgment.
Hey, everything is, like, you're making judgment calls constantly. That's what life is. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just not, you know, there's the idea of judging is, you know, there's a specific version of that we're talking about here, I think.
Yeah, I think it's very clear what we mean. Jamie says, that's good insight. I know I'm not a writer. I'm more of a good hands-on person. So thank you, Govier. Listen, well, thank Chris Towers, of course. Maybe you're thanking me for asking the question. Maybe that's what you're saying. Listening and visuals is what worked with me. Yep. A lot of people prefer visuals to just hearing things. As a former teacher, it's something I really caught on to right away is I knew differentiation is important. And that did help me in the beginning here. Next question is, name your favorite movie by an actor from The Big Lebowski. So one of the actors in that film, one of your favorite movies they were in is?
Man, there's a lot of choices there. But I think my favorite movie is probably Almost Famous with Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's in a relatively small but pivotal role as Lester Bangs, the music critic. And it's arguably my favorite movie. And he gives in that movie, he's in maybe 2 minutes total. It's one of my favorite performances by any actor ever. He's so good. Just offering like little bits of wisdom to the main character. And it's, love that movie, love the soundtrack, love the world. You know, I'm a big music person, so that is, I love that movie. It's one of the most quotable movies of all time. Love that. But, I mean, God, what a stacked cast that movie had, Big Lebowski has, that you could go with. I mean, Boogie Nights with Julianne Moore, John Goodman's in a 1,000 movie. Like, it's a stacked cast, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
It's true. It is his opinion. But a damn fine one, if I do say so myself. I love all those movies. Billy Madison? Yeah. I don't think Adam Sandler was... Was he in The Big Lebowski?
No.
Wait, oh, who's... Oh,
Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi! Oh, deep cut. Nice call. Okay. That's
love
funny.
The movie game, right? You got... And Steve Buscemi's in Fargo, right?
Hell yeah, he is.
So that's another one of my.
That's absolutely right.
So yeah, that's a lot of options there.
Man, I'm glad I called that guy.
There it is. That's him. I love Almost Famous. It's in my top 10 all time, and so we're really hitting. And so is Boogie Nights. Those are two.
Yeah,
I'm not even kidding at all. Movies. Of my top 10 favorite films. Yeah. So
love them.
I'm with you there, big time. I could watch Almost Famous anytime, any place, for all the reasons you just said. It feels like you're part of the crew there, and you're on the bus with them, and all the drama. And you know, actually, I got really bummed out last night. I was doing my Cinema 9 podcast with my friends, Travis and Eric, and we were doing this little bonus thing for Patreon, and we were talking... Oh, I just made the yodeling pickle go off. Whoops. Okay, yes, thank you, pickle. All right, he's done. But we were talking about our favorite covers. What's your favorite cover song? And a Mark Kozelek song came up. And then my friend told me about, unfortunately, that Mark Kozelek had really had a lot of allegations of bad shit about him that I just found out last night. And it really bummed me out because I was a really big Sun Kill Moon fan, Red House Painters, like some really good music from him. And that just made me very sad.
Yeah, kind of a jerk, that guy, unfortunately. So not great.
Favorite cover song though? Could you have a favorite cover that you've always enjoyed?
Song. Gosh, I love "Torn" by Natalie Imbruglia, which I love telling people is a cover because most people don't know that it's a cover of like a, I think it was like a Swedish alternative rock song that she covered.
This is the big difference here. That's the difference. There's a song that you know is a cover of a song that's famous, and then there's a song that was made famous that you did no idea was a cover, just like "Torn."
Yeah, and then like I don't know, Aretha Franklin's version of "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman" is an incredible cover. Her version of "Respect," frankly. So yeah, "Torn" was the first one that came to mind actually. So I don't know what that says about me. But love that song.
I love that song too. And the one that always stands to me, and I've heard it a billion times, and it's been done in movies, is still the Sunday's Wild Horses. I love that song still. And I think it's way better than the Stones' Wild Horses. Oh, really? Sunday's Wild Horses. You got to check. You probably do. If you hear it later on, you'd be like, oh, yeah, right, that song. But maybe not. Maybe.
Okay, I'll check it out. Really, really good. I love Wild Horses, so.
Oh, well, that could be more of a challenge for you then. That will be. I'd love to get your feedback on that. I will hit you up after the fact. Christian Crespo's here. What's up, Christian? He says, Chris went to FIU, so he obviously knows what he's saying. Paws up.
See the paw, feel the claw. Woo. FIU, baby.
Is that like, it must be like Fire Up Chips at Central Michigan University. Same thing, I suppose.
Florida International University Golden Panthers. That is
the Golden Panthers.
Yeah. I think they still go by
big rivals. Yeah, they're definitely the Golden Panthers.
They're
big rivals with Florida Atlantic. Is that their big rival?
Yeah, Florida Atlantic. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The Owls.
The Owls. They've got a great mascot named Owlsley, who I've always thought should be like wearing a monocle and like a top hat. Like, doesn't Owlsley sound like a fancy butler or something?
That is bullshit!
That's not bullshit. That's incredible. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. Wow. The more you know. Wow. I did not know that. Okay, so Mark, is it Mark Apple or Appel? I actually don't know.
I think it's Appel.
Mark Appel?
Yeah.
He's given hope to others with his stunning return to Major League Baseball. Can you think of a player that you would love to see make a comeback who used to play and now is on the outs or his career fell apart and maybe one day he'll show up again?
It's hard to come up with one off the top of my head. The first name that I thought of is just the guy who I always loved was Hanley Ramirez. And I don't know. I saw a picture of him. Who was he with? He took a picture with someone the other day that reminded me like, oh, Hanley Ramirez, he's still like only 38 years old or something. He still looks good. And Hanley's one of my favorite players of all time. So that was the first place I went to.
Ooh. Hanley Ramirez was so much fun. You are a Marlins man, is that correct?
I am a Marlins fan, but I am not Marlins man. I don't have that kind of.
I thought you maybe took offense to that.
he's not really a Marlins fan, right? That's the whole thing. He just like chose the Marlins gear because it was like garish and got him attention, I think. So like, you know, he wasn't with me. You know, rooting for Mark Kotze on the 2000 Marlins when they were losing, you know, 100 games and stuff like that. So I don't, we don't claim him, I don't think.
That's fair. I can live with that. Hanley Ramirez, boy, he had a time there where he was just so much power and speed. And he was player. Really, seriously, a legit fantasy stud. How has Russell Crowe impacted your life, Chris Towers?
I don't think he's impacted my life very much. I like the Nice Guys. That's a great movie. One of my favorites of the last decade or so. But I can't say Russell Crowe has impacted my life specifically. Has he impacted your life?
Oh, yeah, he's had a massive impact. So much so that we even created our own Russell Crowe channel in our Discord for the Plaza podcast. It's just every day, people, all it is just endless gifts of Russell Crowe. It really isn't like think pieces or essays or anything like that. Just
trying to get a second Master and Commander movie made.
Yes! Now you're talking. I've really grown to love that film, and I never saw it until a couple years ago. It really is. It's quite authentic.
I don't know why it didn't make an impact when it came out, but maybe it's got a weird name, you know, Master and Commander.
Master and Commander. There's like a Far Side of the World.
Yeah, it's not a great name. It's kind of like The Edge of Tomorrow, I think is what the movie was called. The Tom Cruise movie that had like four different names. Like they couldn't figure out how to market this movie. It was like Live, Die, Repeat, The Edge of Tomorrow was the original name or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, that's true. Yeah. That's, you know, marketing matters. As it turns out.
Yes, it does. Chad on Twitch says, Brady Aiken pulling Mark Appel would be amazing and a great double middle finger to the trash can brigade who whiffed on both number one picks.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, Henderson Alvarez is another one. I'm just going to stick with Marlins guy.
Oh!
He keeps trying to make comebacks, but man, he was so much fun. Like that one really good year that he had. He just had like all kinds of weird little quirks on the mound, and he just had one great season and couldn't stay healthy, but he was really fun. I was a big Henderson Alvarez fan.
Threw a no-hitter.
Yeah, last game of the season, I believe. Yes. The Detroit Tigers. That was a fun one.
Yes! That's absolutely correct. That was so cool. I actually was really into him for a minute there, and I was like, oh, man, you are a stud. You're a man. You are a human being who was really good at baseball. And he actually followed me over the last year, so I appreciated that. And I thought it was BS, but it really is him, I think. Shouts I'm pretty
to Henderson
confident.
Alvarez.
Woo! Shout out to you, Henderson Alvarez. You're the man, and even if you don't feel like it today, just know that right now people are talking and thinking about you. I think that's pretty cool. I would be happy about that. If 10 years after I was doing nothing and people were still saying, hey, remember that guy?
Yeah.
I'd be grateful for that. I'd be like, hey, thanks, guys. You guys are very cool. All right, we're talking live with Chris Towers here, the one and only, and we're going through our Be Curious, Not Judgmental little fun time here on the Palazzo Pals segment. Wait, that's the segment. The show is called Palazzo Pals. Well, that's actually the episode. So there's a subtitle, the episode title, and then the overall Palazzo podcast.
This is the problem Master and Commander ran into.
It is. God, it's such a pain in the ass, man. Good God. I don't know how they got through it. But yeah, shout out to Henderson Alvarez. That was basically me vamping so I could get that loaded up. All right. But Russell Crowe affects our show in a big way. He's always going to be a part of it. In fact, we close our main episode with his big speech for Master and Commander. So those of you that do listen to us, you know that. And funny enough, I never see the viewership go down to zero when I play that at the end. They're still there. I still see them in there.
People hanging on.
They love it. I don't know why. They're masochists, I suppose. Freddie Freeman has had quite a revelation apparently recently, and I find it to be, I usually don't like to get into the minutiae of the side plots of the season of fantasy baseball. I'm really focused on, you know, I respect the players and I would love to connect with them more and learn about them more, but I'm really focused on what we're doing here and trying to win and trying to be better at this game of analysis. So I was surprised how much I found myself interested in this Freddie Freeman story because it is about the business, which I admit I'm very much would like to know more about, and it's always shrouded in mystery. So do you think that Freddie Freeman was this naive to be unaware that of his own contract negotiations, that he could have had a deal and it was kept from him supposedly by his agent who he recently let go, and that he could have gone back with Atlanta and just found out about this when he came back to Atlanta for the Dodgers series last weekend?
I mean, he seems genuinely, you know, beat up about it. And the fact that he fired his agent now does seem to suggest that, you know, that he learned something that he didn't know, at least. You know, I don't know, like, I don't really understand, like, the rules of that kind of thing and, like, whether it's, like, should agents be allowed to not tell their clients about a contract offer? Like, that feels weird to me. But I don't know. It feels like he just kind of – he didn't – I don't know. Like, he was too hands-off in his own free agency in a way that, like, I don't know, maybe it's because of the lockout, you know, and then the fact that when everything ended, you know, they kind of had to speed the process up, and maybe it was something like that. But it seems like he just didn't take enough of an active role in this, if that's what he wanted, you know. Mm. And, you know, obviously it's the agent's job to look out for the player's best interests, but the player's best interest isn't, like, there's not like a formula for the player's best interest. Like, I always see people do the, like, oh, this player is turning down X dollars by signing in California because of the income tax. And, like, I don't, do we really know of any situations where players are like, yeah, the lack of income tax is why I decided to sign here. Like, I don't feel like that actually happens. And so there's so much that goes into it beyond just, like, the X number of dollars or X number of years. And it does seem like there was just, like, a lack of communication in regards to this. And maybe Freddie Freeman just didn't communicate his particular, what was in his best interest in a way that the agent was able to understand. So it's a weird situation. I don't necessarily feel too bad for Freddie Freeman, because, like, I think the Dodgers are more well equipped to win over the next, you know, 6 years, and he's making a lot of money, and living in Southern California is pretty nice and all that. But yeah, I mean, he seems pretty beat up about it. And it just kind of seems like, I don't know, everybody failed. Like, everybody wanted to reunite, and they just didn't. And it's weird.
There you go. Well said. Very fascinating. I do think there is more, and I've heard, and you're into the NBA too. I know this about you. It seems like with some of the NBA situations and contracts with Orlando and Florida, I've heard there actually were a few legitimate attempts there to go there to avoid tax situations. But you're right.
Yeah.
A lot of it is speculation and few far between.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know. Like, the impact is often overstated, because I think people think, like, oh, you're living in Florida, so you pay Florida taxes. But you actually, like, have taxes based on where you're playing your game, I think is how it works. And so, you know, that matters too. So I feel like that is probably a way overstated factor in terms of a lot of free agency. Like, guys aren't just going because, like, you know, I'm going to make $300,000 more after taxes. Like, I don't think that matters all that much.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to make $300,000 after taxes, but that's, you know, Freddie Freeman, that's a much smaller portion of his paycheck.
Can that be arranged? Is that possible?
If anybody's offering...
Well, you know, fantasy baseball, that's where the money's at. That's why we all come clamoring here. We love cash. Woo! By the way, I have to ask you this because you're here. Are you as excited about the Pistons draft as everybody else is? Because it's pretty exciting around here. People are excited about what the Pistons did in the NBA draft.
I don't follow the NBA draft enough to have an opinion on it.
Oh,
I used to. But I just... Once I stopped writing about the NBA and it became...
Oh, you switched gears. Okay.
Yeah, I used to write about the NBA for the first, like, 6 or 7 years that I worked at CBS. And once I stopped really, like, doing it at all, it became so much harder to keep up. Because, like I can't really follow college football until the draft. I can't really... Because, like, you kind of have to pick. And, like, I go to a lot of concerts. I watch a lot of TV with my wife. And so, like, if I watch the NBA as much as I used to, I would, like, not have a life. And so that's... That's the hard thing. So, yeah, college sports especially, I don't really know very much about at this point.
Okay.
Wow, dude.
That's fair. That's totally fair. I will say that I'm excited about that. I'm excited about what the Pistons have done. And you've left it to Bill Ryder at CBS to run the show there. So, good job. You've handed over the reins to Bill, and he's done a fine job over there. Yeah. Who I watch on CBS Sports HQ.
CBS Sports HQ.
Love it. I love it. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the show. I love it because it's what I used to get from SportsCenter when I was a kid. I get a lot of highlights and talk about the game, not the side stories and the personal, what do they call them? Human interest stories. That's not what I'm here for.
I'll throw it on to catch up with the sports news. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I posted a poll about that a couple months ago. I'm like, do you still watch highlight shows, period? Whether it's CBS Sports HQ or whatever you prefer. Yeah. an overwhelming amount of people on my Twitter following said no. I was surprised. So.
Yeah.
I don't do it every day anymore. It is tough to do it daily. But I thought a couple times a week. Who knows? I know this, that we are talking with Chris, and we're in this little world of being curious. So as we continue our curiosity forth, do you take it personally when something is said about you on social media that you either believe to be or know to be false? I mean, you're a human being, Chris. So I'm really curious about this, and you have been around in the public sphere for a long time now. I think it's a fascinating subject. Just be honest about it. Like, hey, you know, personally, it bums me out when things are said about me that I know to be false or think are false. How do you feel about that? Maybe even going back in time to when you were younger here and first getting into it, maybe it was more impactful.
I try not to let things get to me, generally speaking. Like, most of the time I find it, like, the one example I think of, my friend sent me a my friend uses the Reddit forums for fantasy football for a lot of his advice, and he sent me a link. He was very upset, one of my best friends. He was very upset because there was a thread about my early 2020 positional rankings. And the comment that he was upset, like, he was like defending me in the comments, and I was like, well, that's very sweet, but it doesn't actually bother me. The one that like stood out that I just like couldn't stop laughing about, though, was when I got called, I was called a racist because my top player ranked at each position was a white guy. It was Josh Allen, Christian McCaffrey, Cooper Kupp, and Travis Kelce. But like, those are the consensus top players with the exception of Christian McCaffrey versus Jonathan Taylor. So it was like, really, this is that. That was the one that I was like, man, that people will look for, we'll look for anything to,
anything.
And I have no idea if the comment was serious or not, but
that's the other thing.
I don't know. I try to have thick skin. It bothers my wife way more when she sees mean things that people say about me on Twitter. But like when I got into a spat with Aubrey Huff a few months back,
why? Why would you do that?
In the world.
Yeah, he sucks. He's baiting everyone.
And he called me fat. And Ooh. So I like took a screenshot and posted it on Facebook, and like my aunt called me and was like, why did this person do this? And I was like, I just thought it was funny. Like, this like MLB, former MLB player is like so sad that he's calling people fat on Twitter. And like, but yeah, I guess I forget that, like, I don't know. At some point you just realize that most people on social media forget that they're like talking to a person, you know, that there's the disconnect. And so
I never think that. I really
that's
don't.
That's a big thing. And I fall prey to it too. Like, I'm not perfect. I get into fights on Twitter, and I'm not I know there are people who don't like me as well. And I understand that. And, but yeah, it's important to remind yourself on social media that you are interacting with people, not just like, yes, an avatar on a screen. I think that a lot of people forget that. And when you interact with someone who's going after you like that, sometimes you just like remind them, like, you know, my response when someone says like, oh, you should be fired for this sports opinion, I'm like, but how will my pets eat? Or something like that, you know, just to, and people will like, they'll often just like really calm down after you get some kind of reaction like that.
Yeah, I love that. Uh-oh, did Aubrey post that while at the monthly Mensa meeting? I feel like that's a shot at Aubrey Huff. Come on now, Chad. Come on.
It's fair.
That's reasonable.
I don't want to be mean, but with him in particular, I think it's fine.
Yeah, let's keep it real here. I mean, if sometimes people, it is possible for some people to suck. It is true.
Yes.
And who are we to be the decision makers on that? I will leave that to others. I really try to avoid any type of arguments on Twitter, but I don't know, maybe if I ever get to a point where I have a bigger and bigger following and I connect with more and more people, and they keep, because even at my smaller level compared to yours, and I mean that in all sincerity, it's just a different gap. There's people who hit me up all the time with questions, like every day. Hey, what do you think of this guy? What do you think of this trade? Bing, 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 bing. And sometimes I find it a little overwhelming at times, but I really want to make sure that I've tried to, if someone goes out of their way to talk to me and they want to get my take, I would, it's part of growing too. So I try to stick to that, but I could imagine at a certain point, I would lose sight of the humanity of it when it gets on a bigger and bigger scale. Tens of thousands of followers, hundreds of thousands of followers. It just becomes an awesome force before you.
I think the biggest thing that I struggle with is, like, once you reach a certain level, you just get a lot of, like, really bad faith stuff coming at you. And, like, it's hard to, like, separate that from, like, people who are genuinely asking a question or are, like, you'll... And so that's difficult. And that's something that I definitely struggle with, where, like, I'll just, like, kind of be dismissive of someone in a way that's not fair, because I just kind of assume, like, you put up your guard, I guess, is the way to say it. And it's hard. Social media is weird. You're not, like, I think about, like, you think about human evolution, you know, 200,000 years of the Homo sapiens species, and what, 99.999% of that time, like, up until, like, the last 50 years, every human being probably interacted with, like, 200 people in their entire life. And then, like, or at least within the realm of, like, within the span of time where cities became a thing.
Sure.
The overwhelming majority of people just never met anyone. It was, like, the people you lived with and your family and your tribe, and that was it. And now, like, I can open my phone and send my dumb joke about, like, a 90s alternative rock song to 35,000 people. And then it can grow from there.
Yep.
And so it's like we're constantly having interactions that we just, like, we didn't evolve to understand how to process them. And so we're constantly bombarded with, like, interactions or outcomes that just, like, are so foreign to what our species is used to, that, like, our brains don't really know how to process social media. And so I think it's a great thing, but it's also, like, has a really corrosive impact as well. And it's bad that I'm addicted to it.
Oh, he's coming correct. Look at that. Man, I love when people keep it real on the show. Thank you for being honest. That's exactly. Whether it's what I want to hear or not, I want to always hear the truth. So it means a lot to me. And Chad here says, especially for racist, homophobic, mediocre baseball players, which is in reference to Aubrey Huff, who has some own. I hope Aubrey Huff gets the help he needs. You know, I want everyone to be the best person they can be down the road. Jamie says, I know I harass you with football stuff, Govier. Don't change who you are. That's what draws in the people. Well, thank you.
You
That's
do
very
have
kind
a,
of you.
A much, I would say, a much more positive presence than I do.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. But I hope people think that I'm being me. I don't ever want to put on a front where it's like, hey, I'm the positive guy. Yeah, that's why I try to talk about everything
no matter
what's going on. Because I get that a lot, and I'd start to think, like, boy, that's incredible, but I make a lot of mistakes, and I got plenty of problems.
Yeah, I mean, we're all human.
Exactly.
I appreciate you. You have a positivity that I appreciate.
Someone told me it was I was a lunatic, and I didn't know it, and I was like, oh. But I think they were trying to be complimentary.
Okay.
Like, thanks. Okay.
you can take it as a compliment.
Damn right I will. Yeah. Hey, I'll take it where I can get them. This world can be tough and cruel sometimes. So when we get something to be like, oh, this is great. This feels good. I'm going to run with that for sure. Chad says, I've only been around a couple weeks, but I can safely say you can't fake being you. Well, thank you, Govier. Or no, I'm Govier? Who's who? What is happening here? Where the hell are we? We're on the Palazzo Podcast. Live with Chris Towers here. A couple more questions. We're getting the hell out of here, moving on with our lives. Chris, explain your parameters for buying low on a player. I don't want you to give your secret sauce away entirely, but can you give some insight to people who are always trying to... I had somebody ask me on Twitter the other night, how do you know what to look for when you're buying low?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, like, you base it on, like, it's all about perception, right? And so if a player's perceived value is lower than what you believe their actual value will be moving forward, that's ultimately where it comes from. And so, like, I'm writing about Nick Castellanos today and how this new offensive environment and the way the ball is traveling seems to have really negatively impacted him. You know, I looked up some of the data, and, like, his home run to fly ball rate on balls hit to center field, line drives and fly balls hit to center field, was 23.6% and 25% the last two seasons. This season, it's like 6.5%, which is more in line with what he was back in Detroit. You remember in Detroit, he was this guy who always had these really impressive batted ball data metrics, quality of contact, but was just like a 23 homer, 280 guy. You know, good player, but not a superstar. And he's been much worse than that. And so, you know, in terms of like, I do think you should try to buy low on Nick Castellanos, but I also think it's worth acknowledging that given the new environment with the deadened ball and the humidors, and it's not flying as far, and it specifically seems to be impacting batted balls hit to center field and the power alleys. Well, he derives a lot of his value from that, so you probably can't look at Nick Castellanos and say, well, this is a guy who hit 34 home runs and, you know, hit 300 last season or whatever it was. You probably shouldn't expect that. You do need to calibrate your expectations, but I still think there are probably situations where you can get excess value for him based on what he's done so far. And it's the nice thing about that is the guy in your league who has Nick Castellanos, the person in your league who has Nick Castellanos, they've already got his bad stats. So if he's better moving forward, you're kind of burying them while also helping your team. So I do like the buy low, you know, if you can pull it off. You have to buy low. You know, that's the key also.
Low.
Get low. That's right.
Damn!
That was really well said. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I think all of you here listening or watching live on the YouTube or Twitch, you'll take something from that. That really is a great way to maximize your return and burn someone else. I love that. And, you know, we're not trying to hurt anybody here, but we're trying to win. So let's cut the crap, all right?
Yeah.
That's right. It's all about winning. Winning. By the way, Charlie Sheen, he no longer wants to be known for his winning, that tiger blood thing he did. I find that...
That was such a strange time in our culture. I had forgotten about that.
Dude, what it was a guy who was deeply addicted to drugs, having a mental a breakdown before our entire country. And now he's on Cameo now. And I found this out recently through God knows where this information just pours into my head. But he's been on Cameo because people have been requesting so much of the tiger blood and the winning stuff because a lot of people love that. Yeah. But what... It's a painful moment for him, and he said...
Even at the time, it struck me as very, like, exploitative. I mean, I know, like, you know, he's making a choice to put himself out there, but it was still, like... It's how I feel about, like, present-day Kanye West, where it's, like... He's obviously... I mean, he talked about his struggles with mental health, but he also, like, talked about how he doesn't really want to take medicine or get the help that he needs, and so it's, like... He's like this, like it's this like spectacle, and we're like gawking at him. But it's like it's really sad, and you know, that's how I felt about the Charlie Sheen thing as well. Is it was like this is clearly like someone going through something that is really heavy and really difficult, and for whatever reason, either they're not willing or they're not able to see it, or they don't have the right people around them, and it's really difficult. Like, and it just. It's the kind of thing where you look at it and say, like, you know, kind of the there but for the grace of God go I, you know, like, you know, fame can, you know, like we talked about with the, you know, the human evolution, like Kanye West is surrounded by hundreds of thousands of people will go see him in concerts. And that just like screws up your self-perception in really interesting ways. And I'm always amazed by the people who have those platforms who are well adjusted, because it kind of seems impossible.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. That was, again, very poignant. It's a bizarre world to see yourself adored. I remember I heard this about a rock star, some famous musician recently, where the first time he got stuck in his own traffic from his concert, you know, that's a big moment. He was like, wow, I'm stuck in my own traffic for me. They're all here to see me.
Yeah,
it's pretty wild.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is. So you can't help but go in a different direction when you're in unique parts of the world that few people attain. You're going to be in territories that are less known with less experience. That's just that's how it works. Whether you're exploring Mars or mental space,
there aren't a lot of people who can truly like understand what it's like to be Kanye West, because there are. You know, maybe a dozen people. There are hundreds of thousands or millions of people with comparable lives to me. you know, just in the city of New York.
You know,
like,
oh, yeah.
I'm a pretty, like, there's a lot of people who have very similar experiences to me. There are dozens of people in the entire world, in the entire history of humanity, who have had similar experiences to Kanye West. And so it's like, it's hard. Like, it, I feel a lot of empathy for him. Just because he's obviously not handling it well, you know, I think.
Yeah. That's, yeah, I feel terrible for him. I really do in the end. Even people are like, well, he's responsible for his own actions. Yes. Well, okay. You could sum that up with anything. And yes, that is true, but that's not nuance. And there's more to the story and there's context and all that stuff matters to me. So, you know, I want to give Jasper a quick shout out here because he's been really good to the show and he's been a good friend of mine and he's been having his own challenges recently, so he deserves it. He says he's taking suggestions for his all-around sports site that he just started at work today. How about that? Look at this guy right on the spot doing his own thing. So congratulations, Jasper. He's been talking about it for a while, and now it's coming. He says, MJ, there will always be a place for you and the fellas on my site. And, of course, that's very kind of you. I hope it goes well, Jasper. You're a good man. So a couple questions left. Two left. We're out of here. The final two are this. In the multiverse, there are other Chris Towers with completely different lives based on several factors. Are you more of a nature or nurture when it comes to a stronger influence on the end result of a person? Like the Chris Towers in the other dimensions of the multiverse are doing other things because of different variables from either your genetic profile or your nurturing profile as you grew up in childhood. Which one are you more strongly inclined to believe can be impactful? Or is it all context-based every time?
It's definitely not or, you know, it's not nature or nurture. There are certain things that are to a certain extent hardwired into us from birth, but there's also like, you know, the impact of like childhood nutrition and lead exposure has like, there's like yes. really good, you know, research on like the way that that stuff like that has impacted the outcomes of people's lives.
Flint's in our backyard here, man. So yeah. Yep.
And so it's like, you know, heartbreaking that we still have situations like that where children are being exposed to lead and water in the, you know, the 2000s. But, you know, I think like this is something that it's really hard to have empathy. Empathy is a very difficult thing and I fail at it constantly, but like, I think about like, I'm trying to think about like how personal to get here, but like, I don't have a great relationship with my father. Like, I don't need to get into details, but, you know, there's just, but so I struggle with it because on the one hand, like, you know, the person that he is and the person who doesn't, you know, we don't have a good relationship. It's not like he chose to, like, he didn't choose to, like, not have a good relationship with his son. It's, you know, the result of choices that we've all made throughout the course of our lives. But, like, it's tough to put yourself in the situation where you realize like, you know, or just to be more general, like people who do bad things, you know, we tend to just like, you're a bad person. It's like, well,
yes,
you make choices that lead to bad outcomes and you're responsible for your own choices. Like we said earlier, but it's like, there are also circumstances that people are in that lead them to make the choices. And you still are responsible for the choices that you make and all that stuff. But like, there are people who grew up in bad environments where they didn't have, you know, not even like, you know, the nutrition that they need, but like the emotional support. And like that, it's one of those things that I think about a lot. And it just like breaks my heart. How many people like have bad upbringings and then just don't like, it just like it changes or it wires you for the rest of your life. Like literally like the way your brain is wired is the result of the way you're brought up. And so, you know, if you're in a bad circumstance, you can make the most of it and you can come out of it. But it's like, there's a lot of people in this world who are brought up in bad circumstances who like, it really impacts how your chances of becoming, you know, successful or however you want to define it. It just, not even make it like a judgment thing, just the experiences that you have create branches, I guess would be the way to go back to the multiverse, you know.
And we go to the MCU.
And so you know, that's I guess like you can control which branch you take, but you know, each previous one dictates where you're able to go, I guess would be the way to phrase it. So I'm definitely more nurture. I think that the impact of your environment, your upbringing, all that stuff is much more important than just who you're born to be. I don't think you're hard coded to have a 128 IQ or something, you know, like that stuff, like, you know, maybe
really
a wide range, but I think, you know, the home you're brought up in, the culture you're brought up in, I think that all matters. And I think it's really important. And, you know, that's why I don't necessarily have like a hugely individualistic worldview. I think the community is what matters in a large sense.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you get a lot of shit for that on Twitter too, right? Because you're always trying to, I get that vibe from you a lot. You're always trying to be representative of the community. So to hear you say that out loud makes a lot of sense to me. And I think some people will be like, oh, well, you know, because there's all, I don't even want to go into minutiae at all, but there's this I guess you're right. It really comes down to this individualistic versus community-based perspective that often collides online.
Yeah, and like you're the only one that's responsible for your outcomes. And it's like, well, you're responsible for your choices, but the circumstances that you're in that lead to those choices are the result of a million factors that are in your control and out of your control. And like, I recognize that I'm lucky to have been brought up in a, you know, upper middle class household with, you know, two parents who were there, and I never, you know, went hungry. And like, so that this, you know, like I've earned where I am. Like the level of success that I have in my career, like I've earned that to a certain extent, because I work hard and all that. But like,
yeah,
it's also like, if I have a completely different upbringing, I'm not here, you know, the highly individualistic worldview, I think is bunk. I don't subscribe to it.
Yeah. A great thing from Arnold Schwarzenegger. He doesn't always say great things, but he said this great thing I saw in one of these quick clips on TikTok or YouTube shorts where he's talking about the self-made man is bullshit.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed by that, because he said anything he ever got was because of his first connection with people at these Gold's Gyms that he was at when he first came to America, and they came over and brought him silverware, basic things to survive. And he said the self-made man is always, self-made human being is always going to be a lie. It's just not true.
No man is an island.
It is. It still stands today. And I think America, unfortunately, has driven it into people's minds so much, this individualistic, like, you make it happen, you go, 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 which is part of capitalism and a whole nother story, which I'm not going to get into, but I really like what you said there. And again, because I've lived this life, and I'm not trying to kiss Chris Towers' ass. When things make sense, they make sense. That's all I have to say about that. Yeah. All right. And as we're going to close out the show here, I want to get something that you really enjoy. I have to give you one more baseball question real quick. Head-to-head is better than Roto because why?
Because, you know, there was a little bit of a discourse recently. I think Ariel Cohen was talking about his Tout Wars head-to-head team and how he's had bad luck in the matchups that he's faced and how that's, like, unfair. And it's like, yeah, it's unfair, but that's also part of the fun. Like, it's unfair that, you know, I'm sure there's some team that has had to face the Yankees, like, an inordinate amount of time so far this season, and it's impacted their record. And, like, that's unfair, but it's also, like, that's why we watch sports, you know? Like, we don't want it. It would be boring if the best team won every single game, you know? And so I think the head-to-head aspect, and my favorite version of fantasy baseball is head-to-head categories, because I do think there's value in having to build a team where you do have to have stolen bases, and you do have to have saves, and you can't just punt. You have to, like, find the balance between counting stats and rate stats and all. Like, I think that part of the Roto experience is very fun, but I also think, like, the actual process of playing Roto is kind of a slog. And it's easy to feel like, well, I'm in eighth place and on June 30th, my season's over. But like, in head-to-head, it's like, if you just get into the playoffs, you got a chance. And so that's why
I
prefer that. Yeah.
Big time.
I think it's more fun. It adds more of a human element to it. And the unfairness is, I think, the unfairness or the randomness, if you want to put it that way, I think is a feature and not a bug.
It's part of life. It's part of the game we watch every day. Sometimes a guy gets suspended 7 games, other guy gets suspended 4 games, and it should have been vice versa. These are unfair rulings, arbitrary at times, based on something, but seen differently by people who make judgments, and that's the game. That's how it works. And that's what umpires do every day. They do that every day. So, by the way, the show is all about the head-to-head, ride or die, the Palazzo podcast. I've been pushing this hard in my Fantrax HQ article every week, the Fantasy Baseball Confidential, which you could read every Monday. And I've been pushing it. I'm pushing my home league, which is head-to-head. It's a keeper league, and it's cats. It's not points. I know Patrick Ryan here, he said head-to-head. He's a huge head-to-head points guy, and that's cool too. But I'm with Chris. Again, our home league, BYB, shout out to those guys. We love head-to-head cats, and we always have. And building that roster takes a lot. Also, Jasper said, nice work, guys. Some great insight and things to think about a bit more. I love it. And Donovan says, word, which was in reference not to our head-to-head, but what we were just talking about earlier. And Jasper says, finally, last place last season, third place currently, 12-team head-to-head since 96. Wow. That's nice. Impressive. I think I know the answer to this final question. Because it may have just happened recently, but maybe it wasn't. The best concert you ever went to and why?
Oh, man. I did see Paul McCartney last week. Bruce Springsteen came out. That was one of the best concert moments I've ever had.
Same. You were at that concert?
Yeah, I was at that
I read
concert.
About that and heard it. Wow, yeah, okay.
That was wild. That's one of those, like, holy bleep, I can't believe I just saw those two people together.
Yeah, especially this late in life. You won't see that again.
I mean, yeah, like that was the thing. I've seen Paul McCartney 6 times now, and it was like,
oh,
these are really expensive tickets. Yeah, the Beatles growing up were like, the way I always put it is the Beatles were like oxygen in my house. Like, that was like, you know, even if you never like went out of your way to listen to the Beatles, you know, every word growing up in my house because it was just always on. And so, and it was like, well, I've seen him a lot. Tickets are expensive, but it's also like, it's a Beatle, and he's 80. And it might be your last chance. So, like, yeah, I'm going to go see him. Best concert I've ever been to, though.
It's tough.
I've been to a lot. That's a big thing for me. Janelle Monáe was incredible. I saw her on the Dirty Computer tour, and that was just – the crowd was awesome. The crowd is a big part of a good concert. Like, if you're in a crowd where people are into it and, like, that makes a big difference, and the crowd was amazing at that show, and she puts on an unbelievable performance. She's an incredible performer, so that's definitely up there. And David Byrne's American Utopia.
I wish I'd gone to that, man.
I've seen it on Broadway as well. If you haven't seen it on HBO, it's an incredible performance, but the tour, that was one that, like, stayed with me for months. Like, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. The choreography, the marching band aspect of it, the stories he tells, the songs, obviously one of the, you know, the greatest songwriters of all time. That was a really, really special show. That one definitely, like, I get like chills just thinking about that concert.
My friend told me that, yeah, he went saw it here locally at what is known as the Fox Theater, which is a little bit of a smaller but still a healthy size, beautiful place in downtown Detroit. And he said it was so worth it. He would have paid any price. And I was pinching myself. I think that was, I want to say it was during COVID. Is that true or false?
He did the tour. The tour was probably like 2017 because it was still back in South Florida. The Broadway show
okay.
Was like pre and then post COVID.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, really just incredible, like, incredible stuff. So definitely that's up there for sure.
Okay, those are the fine choices there. I said recently, I think mine still holds. It was seeing Rage Against the Machine at Lollapalooza 08. I had never seen them, and the whole, and again, I guess we have a lot in common, because you're right, the crowd in particular for that show, for that event, it was August 08. The economy was falling apart. We'd had 8 years of Bush and like all this bullshit. And then you got Rage Against the Machine
coming
out of the woodwork. Yeah.
Their first show in probably a decade or so.
Yeah. Since they broke up in like 2000 and I'd never got to see them. And I was a huge fan of them growing up. So I always felt like I missed something. So when that chance came, you put all those factors together. It's a difficult environment to replicate. That was incredible.
I definitely want to see them on their upcoming tour with
With
Run the Jewels. That sounds like it's going to be an amazing show.
Definitely. Definitely going to make that a priority. We were all excited for it before COVID and the tickets got canceled. So we will do that. We got a whole crew here. We'll be fired up too. It's
awesome.
Yeah, it's funny that Rage Against the Machine, they hold a strange place in society for me because they had this like message that they really believe. I have no doubt that everything that they've written about and Tom Morello spoken about too, not just Zach De La Roca, there's a lot of social and political angst in what they did, and people were really drawn to it on a mass scale, not just the music, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then like all those people, I kind of get the same vibe of like the baby boomers who went through the hippie movement in the 60s and all that, and then like life just kind of went on.
Well,
you know what I mean?
There's a lot of people who like the appeal of Rage Against the Machine, like Paul Ryan. You know, Paul Ryan's favorite Rage Against the Machine has always been hilarious. And the dichotomy between like the things he personally believes and the things that band is like not just believes, but like we're singing about.
Yes.
There were a lot of people who had that disconnect where they
the structure is set, you never change it with a ballot poll. Was Paul Ryan singing that hardcore, congressman?
Like they're singing like they're talking about like indigenous rights of Latin America, indigenous groups of Latin America and the way they've been exploited by capitalism, and I think there were a lot of people who just like didn't connect that, and there's the famous like. I can't remember. Tom Morello was on Twitter and someone said like, I used to love your music before you got political. And it's like, no, that's not how it works.
That is just a stupid statement, man.
Weren't paying attention. Yeah.
Clearly. So, yeah. I mean, we all know who Leonard Peltier was just because of Rage Against the Machine. Yeah. They had a video called Freedom and I would never have known who it was, especially back in 93, 94.
So,
that's pretty wild.
It is one of the, like, if you were to explain, like, it's a heavy metal / rap group that primarily sings about, like, not just, like, left-wing politics, but, like, ultra, like, radical leftist politics.
Yes.
And they were one of the biggest bands in the world. It's like,
right.
The 90s were a weird time. That's one of the, there's a lot of artists in music who were popular that, like, there's never, that could never have been.
These two. Thing. Korn and White Zombie, 5 times so far, says Jasper.
Okay. I feel like I saw Korn when I was a kid. I remember it being a good show.
Rob Zombie turned into a director. He left. I don't even know him for his music anymore.
Good director. Yeah.
Yeah. He knows the genre. I'll give him credit for that. Not my personal favorite, but.
Yeah. But yeah, like the 90s, like, I don't know if. God, who was I? The President of the United States of America.
Yeah, moving to the country.
I don't think that's a band that could have been popular at any other point except for the 90s. The 90s were this like weird, like there was like still the monoculture, but the underground became mainstream for a little bit. And you had like this weird blending of all kinds of different types of music that were popular. And so it was definitely a strange time in music, but I think it's one of the best, I would argue. Popular music in the 90s. I think I'll put it up against any other era.
I have a hard time separating my own experiential bias, but
yeah, I was
it's difficult.
Whatever was popular when you were 10 is, gonna stick with you forever.
But I was born in 1980, so I lived my first 10 years in the 80s. Definitely the 10 most, like, I don't know what's going on years, sure. But also the most sponge-worthy years where a lot of things get sucked into you. And I came back real strong on 80s music that I didn't really know when I was a kid that I got to hear as I became a teenager and a young adult, like The Cure and all that new wave stuff. I love that stuff. So I put that up against any other period of music, too. But it's interesting. We could do a whole show about that. But, we won't. We will stop here. We will end this show. And we will thank Chris Towers for his time and energy. He is now our Palazzo pal. Isn't that cool? See what we did there? Look, we did a whole episode. Like, now we can say that, isn't it? It's kitschy. What's the difference between kitschy and quirky and I don't know the difference, I guess. Kitschy. What does kitschy mean?
I think kitschy. I think it's, I don't know. I feel like
I don't either.
I feel like it's like the buttons, like the flare that they wear in Office Space at whatever the bar is called, or like the like Applebee's
tchotchkes.
Like, stuff on the wall.
Tchotchkes.
Yeah, like that. I think that's what kitsch is.
Tchotchkes, that's great. Oh, Patrick says Ween. Oh man, you people who are into Ween are a unique bunch. I will say that. I will give you that.
Have never seen Ween. I'm sure it's a spectacle though.
I'm sure it is, and I respect what they do. It's just not really my thing. It's like, you know, they're jokesters, I think, but you know, they know how to write. Anyways, I could talk for hours. Thank you to Chris Towers. Thank you, everybody who was in the live chat. Of course, follow him on Twitter, @CTowersCBS. Follow us on Twitter, 2L's 2Z's.
Utah, give me two.
Plaza Podcast, and you can get the pinned tweet at the top where the Discord is free. And if you like the show and you want to talk more about 90s music and stuff during the week, we just opened up the Heat channel. We have a whole channel now dedicated to the movie Heat. And immediately people started posting things about the Miami Heat. So I guess we don't really know what the channel's about officially, but it does say Heat. So maybe a hot day today might make the cut. Who knows? All I know is I love doing the show, and I love getting to connect with people like Chris. So thanks to Chris. Thanks to you guys. Catch you later. But they will only care for one day.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.